book, but he, of course, was not able to make it, and his son Steve graciously agreed to come and fill in, even though it was very difficult for him to do at that time. Last year, we went to the model of having one of our keynote speakers fill this slot, and it was Neil Pollard, and he was careful to give deference and make acknowledgement of the idea that he was filling an honored spot. And this year, the lectureship committee saw fit, and I'm thankful that they did, to invite Steve back. He had a lecture this morning, and he'll have this one this evening, and we're very glad that he is here. From the Carnes Church of Christ in Knoxville, Tennessee, Steve Higginbotham.
Turn myself on here. There we go. Good to see you. I appreciate your presence again tonight. And I didn't know how long it had been. I knew that Dad finished the lectures for many years and had the last lecture. And so I accepted and was honored to be able to speak here tonight. I know Dad loved this school and loved the school of preaching, the congregation here, and the work that you have been doing. And since my dad passed away, there are things that I've done. I've read books that he read. I found something from his high school days and some of his favorite authors when he was in high school. I'd never heard of these people before, but I found them. And I read because I wanted to see, you know, what made it was interesting to him. I've listened to music, and that's been really hard. I've listened to music that he would listen to. And, you know, this school was special to him. And it, because of that, if nothing else, is also special to me as well. We hear great things about Andy and the work that he's doing here. And I'm happy to be associated with the school. And I wish you all the best in your efforts. There aren't very many congregations across our land that are producing preachers, and it's a thing to be proud in a good sense, if I can say that, to be able to say we have helped put this many preachers out into the brotherhood, or and they're continuing to preach the gospel, and so we're thankful to you for the good work that you're doing here. Tonight's lesson is entitled, God Gives Me Companionship. I appreciate the song that was led just a moment ago, God Will Take Care of You. And that really is true. It's not some trite thing that we just say because that sounds like a religious thing to say. There is a reality to being a child of God that is pragmatic. It helps you through life. It makes life easier. And really, my lessons, the one that I had this morning and the one tonight, are so close, hand in hand, with the idea of strength and companionship. So there may be some overlap. But let me just tell you, I heard the story about a woman who about 100 years ago had just had electricity run to her house, very first time. And oh, she was so excited. You know, I can flip a switch on my wall and the lights come on. And I can flip that switch off and they go off. And she was so impressed with that. And they got it all set up for her, and the men left. And about 2 months later, they came back and they said, we just came by to check and to see what your problem is. And she said, oh, I don't have any problem. And they said, well, you must have, because it's not registering any use, you know, down at the plant. We don't see any use on your meter that you're using the electricity, and we just wanted to know what was going on. And she said, oh, no, I use it every day. It's great. And they said, well, what do you do? How do you do it? And she said, well, every night about dusk when it starts to get a little dark, I walk over and I flip that switch on, the light comes on, well enough so that I can see to light my candle, and I flip it back off. And, you know, I think, as you hear that story, I think you can see that woman is missing something. She's missing the power of electricity. She just has a small glimpse of what it can do for her. It can do so much more for her that she has not yet even comprehended. And I think that's the truth with this subject, the presence of God in our life, his companionship with us. If we don't understand that concept, we really are robbing ourselves of something that is rich, that is deep and substantial. And so wherever I go, I try to do at least one sermon on the presence of God. And I know I held a meeting here a few years ago, and I may have shared some of this information here, but when this assignment was given to me, I thought, you know, we've got to talk about some of this again. But the presence of God. Open your Bibles to Psalm 139. And I want to take the time just to read a little bit of this. I know I could read the first 16 verses, but let's just pick up in verse 7 of Psalm 139. The psalmist says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from me, hide from you, but the night shines as the day, and the darkness and the light are both alike to you. For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you. When I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth, your eyes saw my substance, being yet unformed. And in your book, they are all written. The days fashioned for me, when as yet they were none of them." The psalmist very vividly describes the truth that we can't escape God. He knows everything. He knows all about us. You can't hide from him. He's present. You can go to heaven, he's there. You can go to the grave or Sheol, and he's there. You can do things under the cover of darkness, and he sees it just like it's daylight. He's everywhere. Even in the womb, he's aware of your presence. He's there. Now, for some, that might be a little disconcerting. Depends on how you choose to live your life. If you're living a life of sin, to know that God sees everything, that's a little bit disconcerting. One time years ago, some friends and I were out, and we were doing some things we shouldn't do at our neighbor's house, kind of knocking on the door and running, you know, those kind of things. And there was a man sitting, another neighbor, sitting on his back porch. We didn't see him. And he said, "Are you boys having fun?" Oh, boy, that stopped it right now. He saw, and we stopped immediately. We weren't going to do that anymore because he saw. You see, sometimes when people see, we change our behavior, don't we? The presence of another person can change everything about us. And I want us to understand that God's presence can not only deter you from wickedness and from evil, but it can strengthen you. All of us have probably lived long enough to face things in life that we would just as soon not ever have to face again. And if we could take those things back, we'd like to take them back. Hard, difficult things happen. Heartbreaking things happen to us in life. But as we go through those heartbreaking things, it really is substantive to be able to know that God is with me. Makes it so much easier. And I want to share with you three things this evening about the companionship of God and how that can, in a very pragmatic way, a very practical way, help you to be a better person and help you to finish your Christian walk and to do so with joy and not with regret. first point I'd like for you to consider is the promise of his presence. Matthew chapter 28, 19 and 20, the Lord said, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, teaching and baptizing them, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the world." As long as we have been given the commission to go preach, make disciples, baptizing them, the Lord says, "I'm going to be with you as you go and as you preach and as you baptize." That's good news. And that is more than just words on a piece of paper. There's great confidence that comes by knowing that Jesus says and God says, "I'll be with you." Have you ever, if you have children, have you ever carried them around the house at some point and gone in the kitchen and stood them up on the cabinet, right, on the countertop, and you back a step away and say, "Jump." And they might go, I don't know. "Will you catch me?" "Well, of course I'll catch you. Go ahead and jump." And they jump right off. Why? Because they know that I'm... Can you imagine a father saying, "Okay, jump. Woo-hoo." You know, and you just watch the child fall? No one would do that. The presence of your father indicates this is going to be okay. Even though this is scary, I'll do it. And we used to, like, go as far back as I thought was safe, you know, and there to go. You know, they just had that absolute trust. If I trust and believe that God is with me, then I can have assurance. The fears that often overwhelm some folks, that it doesn't have to overwhelm us because God's with us and he'll catch us. Living with a sense of presence will change the way you live, and it'll change it for the better. Think of how the presence of God would change your life if you... Well, let me give you this illustration. Do you remember in the Old Testament, 2 Samuel chapter 6, David was king, Solomon had been king, and now David has come to power, and he decides it's time to bring the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem. And so they go out and they get the Ark of the Covenant, and they foolishly don't consult the Word of God in this matter. They're just in a hurry to do it, and they run out there and they take it a cart and put the thing on a cart. They have the wrong people handling. They weren't of Kohath. They had the wrong people handling. They put it on a cart, and then as they're coming back home, the oxen stumbles, and of course, the man, you remember, reaches up, Uzzah, touches the ark to stabilize it, because he would hate, it's the Ark of the Covenant. You can't let it fall, and he touches it, and he's struck dead. And you know what David's reaction was? He was mad at God. He was so mad, he said, "Forget it. I'm done." Have you ever had people get mad, and then they just say, "I quit"? That's what David did. And he just left the ark there, and he marched himself back to Jerusalem, and there was a man by the name of Obed-Edom. And they said, "We're going to put the Ark of the Covenant in your house." Can you imagine the Ark of the Covenant in your living room? Can you, what do you think? It was there for several months in Obed-Edom's house. What do you think? Do you think that changed the way Obed-Edom lived? Do you think he spoke more kindly to his wife and his children during those 6 months or however long it was? I've forgotten right off the top of my head. What do you think it did, the dynamics that must have changed? Do you think that they were careless and spoke rash and unkind words about themselves or to themselves and about others? Do you think they would have done that with the Ark of the Covenant right there? Can you imagine trying to walk around it and not touch it? You know, and just its presence would have dominated their life, and it would have changed the way they live. What if we put the Ark of the Covenant in your house? What if God came to live with you? And when you sat down to flick on the television set, Jesus sat right down on the couch right next to you. What would you watch? Would you change the channel more than you do now? What about your dealings with other people? What about your conversations with your spouse or children at night? Would you judge motives? Would you talk about people? Or would all that get cleaned up if Jesus was right there? You know, I used to play a lot of basketball, and I'd go to the Y, and we'd be playing, and in between games, we'd sit down, and, you know, we'd just be talking to guys and stuff, and they'd say, hey, what do you do? That's always, you know, what, I'm a preacher. Oh, you know, and then they're like, sorry about that. You know, I know, when, you remember that one pass, I said, sorry about that. And then they change. They totally change because the presence of somebody that they think is spiritual changes the way they behave. It changes the way they conduct themselves. Listen, if we would remember the promise of God's presence, it will change us too. It'll make us better people. If we realize, and listen, we don't have the Ark of the Covenant in our living room, but we do have the promise that Jesus abides with us all the same. The Ark isn't here, but Jesus still is. He's not physically present, but does he miss what you talk about? Does he hear the things that you say? God has promised to be with us and not to leave us. And that promise should change the way we live and should change us for the better. Imagine how much better and more conscientious we would be if we remembered God is here. He's with me now. He hears what I say. He hears what I'm talking about and who I'm talking about. He knows whether I'm judging motives or not. He knows whether I'm being kind or not. He knows if I'm being corrupt or not. It would make us better. So that's the first thing. You know, God gives me companionship, and because of that, it makes me a better person. When I remember he's with me, how can you do wrong when God is with you? It's so much easier to do right. The second thing that I want us to note is that because of God's presence, if we focus upon that, the things of life that just really wear us out, that weigh on us, that break our hearts, that leave us scared and confused and like, oh no, what's tomorrow going to be like? What's going to happen to me in 5 years from now? And my children, what about my children? What will become of them? All those things that just worry us to death sometimes. The presence of God, if we focus on that, makes all those other problems so small and so insignificant. You know, we talk about sometimes happiness. You don't have to have joy or to have joy and happiness in your life. You don't have to have circumstances just so, because you can be happy in the midst of bad circumstances. And not only is that true, but I think that's borne out in the presence of God. I can find tremendous blessings even when my life is a wreck and things are happening that are out of my control that I really don't like. I can still find blessing in that. Daniel chapter 3, if you have your Bible, you might want to go ahead and turn there. But Daniel chapter 3 has a really interesting story. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were to be thrown into the fiery furnace. And they were given a chance to recant and go ahead and bow down and worship the image. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. And so the king is furious. And he has that oven heated up, that furnace heated up, 7 times hotter. The men who threw them in died because of the heat. They were bound as they were thrown in. And I find one of the most remarkable statements made in Daniel chapter 3, verses 22 through 26. Because when they are thrown in, you remember what happens. They don't immediately get burned up. In fact, the ropes burn off their hands. They're free. And they're walking around, and people look in, and they see a fourth figure a son of the gods or a son of somebody that was godlike was in there with them. And here's the amazing thing. The king goes up there and says, hey guys, come out of there. Think about that for a second. If we had a bonfire burning out here in the parking lot, and we took you by your hands and your arms and did this 1, 2, 3 kind of thing, and we threw you in that bonfire, even if you didn't feel pain immediately, what are you going to do? You're not going to lay there and go, oh, look what they've done to me. Oh, no. You wouldn't just lay there in the fire. You'd jump out. I would. You throw me in fire, I'm getting out just as quickly as I can. Whether I feel it or not yet, I'm getting out. And Nebuchadnezzar, or the king, has to go up and say to these three men, come out of there. Why would you have to say, come out? Because they were in the presence of God. There was a fourth figure in this fiery furnace, and he distracted their attention from their present circumstances. They had to be told to exit fire because of the presence of this fourth. And I think that that's significant because they're... the presence of God, if I know that God is with me, everything's going to be okay. I don't like my circumstances, but they're not nearly as big when I measure them up against the God I serve. It's that grasshopper mentality, remember? We're but grasshoppers in their sight, those folks told Moses. But they had it all wrong. They were grasshoppers in the sight of God. Well, a number of years ago, I had this, and I brought it, and I left it at Brent's house. But I had this little button, and I may have shared it here when I was here before, but I had this little button. When I was a child, there were 5 doors that I had to walk past to get to my bedroom. And that meant that there were 5 opportunities for monsters to jump out and get me before I went to bed at night. And my parents would say, go to bed. And I would be like, but I have to walk down the hallway by myself. And I didn't want to do that. I ordered a button when I was a little boy. And it says on it, and I brought it, and I forgot to bring it, though. It says, charter member of the Batman and Robin Society. And it had a picture of Batman and Robin, Adam West, Burt Ward Batman, not the dark guys now, but, you know, that lighthearted Batman and Robin. And, man, and I still have it. And I could pin that on my pajamas when I was a little boy, and I could walk down that hallway. They're not going to mess with me. I'm a charter member of the Batman and Robin Society. Just having that button made me feel safe. How much more would it make me feel safe knowing that the God of heaven is walking with me? You see, if a button can empower me to do what I otherwise would be reluctant to do, what about the presence of God? How much more should that empower me? I've told this maybe, but our youngest daughter and our youngest son, when our youngest son was just little, Anne-Marie was about 2, he was about 6, and we would be upstairs, and I'd say, hey, Matthew, would you go downstairs and get whatever? And he'd say, downstairs? Everybody's upstairs. I know, just go downstairs and get that. Yeah, but it's dark. Well, turn the light on. Well, but there, you know, and he would just start this stammering. And eventually, here's what it would work down to. Hey, Anne-Marie, want to go downstairs with me? A 2-year-old. He's going to ask a 2-year-old to go downstairs with him to embolden him to be brave enough to do what he otherwise would not do. And I always thought, what's a 2-year-old going to do to help you if there is something down there? I think I figured it out. He was going to sacrifice her and then run. I figured it out later, but at the time it kind of threw me. But even a 2-year-old, it made a difference. Just the presence of someone else, it strengthened him. And again, I'm just saying, I don't know what all will face you in life, but I know that God will be with you. And that should make a difference. There are scary things that are going to happen to you in life. You're going to go to the doctor and you're going to hear things that terrify you. But God being with you really, really makes a difference. There are times when things, you know, in life and you think about some things and situations that are going on in your circle of influence, and you think, wow, I don't even know how I can deal with this right now. This is just, I feel like I'm drowning. Have you ever felt that way? It's just too much. But then, you know what, and I think it may have been Emmanuel earlier, someone was saying, when you're down and discouraged and depressed and at your lowest, worship. It really does make a difference. When you can call God to your side and know that He's with you, that's not that big anymore. Oh, I don't like it any more than I did before, but I can manage it. I can finish this. I can see it through to the end. Back in the 2000 Olympics, there was a guy by the name of Eric Mozambani. He was a swimmer for Equatorial Guinea. He was a terrible swimmer, but he had a special dispensation given to him because he was from an underprivileged country, and he got to swim in the Olympics, the 100-meter race. And they had all these heats line up and go, and eight guys would swim, and eight guys would swim. And then it was finally him, and he and two other guys had the Olympic pool to swim in, and they swim as fast as they can to the one end and come back, and that's all it is. It's just it's a all-out sprint. The two guys on either side of him, false start. They jump in before the gun goes off. You're only allowed one of those, and if you do two, you're disqualified. Well, both of those guys get back up on the platform, and they jump in early, and it just left Eric. He's the only one left. He's swimming in the Olympic pool all by himself. All eyes are on him. They're not looking at all eight swimmers. They're just looking at him. And he took off, and he swam to the other end of the pool. And you know how they do that really cool flip, you know, and push off the wall, and off they go again? Oh, his was awful. I mean, it was just terrible. He didn't know how to flip. Couldn't do it. And he said in an interview later, he said, when I trained in the ocean, and I had people watch for crocodiles for me. And sometimes when it rained enough, I could swim in this swimming pool in front of a hotel. But he said, quite frankly, I never swam that far without stopping and resting. And he said, I was tired on the way back. Some guys cut through, well, all those Olympic swimmers just cut through the water gracefully. He was vertical, you know, like a dog paddle, and just trying to make it by the end. He was so tired. His body had sunk in the water. One commentator said he looked more like an energetic drowner than an Olympic swimmer. But, you know, he finished. And when he got out, he said, you know why I finished? He said, I knew I was terrible, but I couldn't quit because all these people were there with me. And they were cheering me on, and I could hear their cheers. And I said, I cannot stop. As tired as I am, I have to finish. Listen, God is at your side. He's watching, and He's with you, and He's calling you on and cheering you on. And yeah, there are things that aren't easy in life, and we don't deal with it very gracefully, but finish. You can do that, and knowing that God is with you helps you to do it. The presence of God isn't just some religious word, you know, or religious concept or spiritual things to talk about. It's real, and it makes a real difference in your life. The promise of His presence gives us security. The focus of His presence allows us to minimize our circumstances and focus on Him and Him only. And let me give you the third and final point. What about the peace of His presence? Have you ever thought about the peace that comes because God says, I am with you and I'll never leave you. I'm going to be with you all the way to the end. Romans 8 and verse 28 says, we know that all things work together for good to those that love God and who are the called according to his purpose. It's not a promise for everybody, but it's a promise for us. Wow. Don't you give thanks to God for that promise? You see, when life gets really messy, I remind myself of that quite frequently. I want to remember that he said he's going to be with me, and there's peace in that. When my daughter went to school for the very first time, our oldest daughter, we'd never let go of any of them, and it's kindergarten, first day, and this cute little thing has a backpack on, and she's saying goodbye, Daddy. Oh, you think you're going to leave and go to the big school on that big bus all by yourself? You know what I did? I followed. I got in my car, and I followed the bus to the school, and I saw her get off and go into school. And guess where I was at 2:30? I was sitting there waiting for her to get back on the bus, and I followed her home because I just wanted to be there. Now, she didn't know it. And had she known it, she might have gotten mad. But I tell you, she would have felt safe. That's one thing. There are certain people, when we know that we're in their presence, we know they'd do anything for us. And there's peace that comes from that. The Bible tells us of a story, an account in 2 Kings chapter 6. The king of Syria is just fed up, Ben-Hadad. Every military move that he makes against Judah, it gets thwarted. And so he called a meeting of all his advisors and said, listen, one of you guys is a traitor. I want to know which one it is. Because every time I decide something, they have countered it. They've moved their troops. They've thwarted all of our plans. And someone's telling them, who is it? And finally, one of the guys had the courage to speak up and said, well, we're all loyal to you. I'll tell you what's going on. It's that prophet of God. They've got a prophet in Judah. And every time, even in the darkness of your own bedroom, the deepest thoughts that you have, God is telling him what they are, and he's relaying that to the king. And that's why every move you make, they're one step ahead of you. And so he said, well, then we got to get rid of him. So under the cover of darkness, they surround the city that the prophet Elisha is in. They've got them bottled up. They're going to get rid of their problem. And in the morning, Elisha's servant gets up and he goes out. And you can imagine going out to, I don't know, like go out and get your paper. And you pick up your paper and you look up and all you see is the Syrian army surrounding your house. He runs back in and he says, Elisha, we're doomed. There's nothing we can do. Do you know what's happened? They've surrounded us under the cover of darkness. They're going to kill us. And Elisha is calm as can be. And you know why? Well, he explains. Because at that point, he told his servant, and he spoke to God, and he said, Lord, open his eyes so that he can see. And the Lord opened his eyes, and that servant saw an army of angels, chariots of fire, surrounding them, and greater was their number than the number in the Syrian army. Can you not hear the sigh of relief that must have come out of that servant's mouth? Oh, that was scary for a minute. I mean, I thought we were doomed. I mean, I went out and I saw that. I didn't know that God, okay, we're going to be fine. And folks, that's what the presence of God does. When I realize that his presence is real, it gives me peace. I don't know what I have to face today, and it may be awful. And what you have to face may be awful and pain and heart-wrenching. But whatever it is, it's redeemable. God is with me, and he's going to take care of me. And he promised, Romans 8, 28, that he will do a special blessing to those who are his and that he'll take care of us. And so with those thoughts in mind, you know, I said this morning, I don't want to minimize the difficulties that you may have in life. Some people go through life so gracefully, and others it's just a succession of tragedies, and your whole life is just one horrendous event after another. If you're that latter category, don't quit. Don't give up. See it through to the end. Because we're going to reach the end, and the God who has been with us through all of these difficulties is going to be able to say, well done, our good and faithful servant. I'm so proud of you. You've done such a good job. A number of years ago, we went home, we had, Kim was about to have our last child, and the kids haven't seen grandma and granddad in a while, and so I said, well, I'll take them up by myself. I'll just put the three of them, 11, 7, and 3, in the back of the van, and I'll go all by myself 7.5 hours to, whew, I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but I tried, and I put those kids in, and these children who were so excited about getting to go to grandma and granddad's, there were things along that long journey that changed their excitement, I'll say it that way. I had to turn around and draw the line, you know, in the back seat at one point. And then not long after that, my son fell asleep, my older son, and he drifted over, and I heard a smack, and I looked in the rearview mirror, and I caught my three-year-old. We caught eyes in the rearview, and he still had his fist doubled up. And he said, Daddy crossed the line. And, you know, this love and help all just turned south. You know why? They lost their focus. They were excited when they knew they were going to see grandma and granddad. But they'd lost their focus along the way. And that's the way it played out. It happens to us. If we would keep our focus on the presence of God and know that he's with us and we're going to be with him, then the things of life won't distract us and they won't throw us for a loop like it did for my kids. When we finally got home to see grandma and granddad throw the back door open and run out and grab those kids and take them in their arms and hug them and so forth, you know, that made it all worthwhile. All that hardship and that journey, it's all okay. It's worth it because you're home. Listen, we're going home. Don't let whatever this life has that makes life difficult for you to sidetrack you or derail you from your focus of going home. You want to go home. You want to be embraced in the arms of your Heavenly Father and hear him say, well done. I'm so glad you're here. Enter into the joys prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Listen, if you're here tonight and you're not yet a child of God, why don't you obey the gospel? Why don't you start on your journey home and benefit from the presence of God and the strength of God as he watches over you throughout your life? If you're a child of God already but unfaithful and you need to make some changes in your life so that you can go home to be with him, we'll pray with you if you'll come as we stand together and sing.